Traveling the Vortex.
We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and landed episode number 96. And did you guys know Eureka is Greek for this bath is too hot? I'm Keith.
I'm Sean.
I'm Glenn.
How is everyone?
Very good.
A lot better now that we've started.
How was your guys' weekend?
We had a very, very, very long pre-show meeting.
That's one way to say it.
We hope you guys think it's worth it.
Yes. I feel like I did a lot this weekend because Holly's been sick since Tuesday.
Oh, no.
And so, is that a no-no for Holly or a no-no for what you're doing?
Holly being sick.
You're still finalizing. Okay. So she's been sick since Tuesday. So, it's been pretty much just me and the kids. What did we do this weekend?
We continued with Disney.
We did. What was our movie this week? Cinderella. We did Cinderella.
Cinderella, Cinderella, night and day, Cinderella.
We did that. We made a
list.
We made a cake for Cinderella's wedding. And the kids made the cake, pretty much. I helped them, but I mean, they did most of it and they decorated it. And it was a lot of fun. So Cinderella was this week. We went and got pumpkins today and we carved those. Seems like we did yesterday. My niece had a birthday party yesterday. That was the other thing. So we did that. And then today, we carved park pumpkins. Kids got in their costumes, went to Mason's preschool / church where they were doing a trunk or treat tonight. Then came back home and roasted the seeds. And that was pretty much it. The kids, when I left the house, because then I came over here for another special occasion, which I'll let Sean talk about. When I left, they were watching TV, I think, or something. So
I take it tomorrow at work you'll be eating pumpkin seeds instead of sunflower seeds?
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. I should bring the pumpkin seeds in.
Sarah and I had a very low-key weekend. We ran some errands Saturday and watched Mockingbird Lane after I DVR'd it. Which, if you haven't watched it, if you can seek it out, I'd seek it out. It's worth at least seeing. Especially if you're a Brian Fuller fan. If you didn't like Pushing Daisies, if you didn't like Dead Like Me, if you didn't like Wonder Falls, you won't like this. You'll hate it. But how anybody could hate those other shows, I don't understand either. I mean, seriously, Brian Fuller is so high up there on my showrunner list. It's
I will watch. What do you do with Doctor Who?
Ooh. That also conjures up the image of the Disney poster we had last week.
Yeah, actually, kind of does. Now that you say that.
But so we watched that, and then we watched Chimpanzee, the Disney nature film.
How's that?
Sad but good. Being a giant monkey and ape fan, I found it absolutely fascinating. Sarah thought it was more sad than I did, but it's definitely worth watching at least once.
Good.
Getting it from the library, definitely worth your money.
Okay. Sean, what did you do this weekend?
Did
not go to Tennessee.
I did not go to Tennessee.
As I thought you had.
It was discussed, and I kind of broke down and told him. I was like, dude, I just got caught up on homework from the last time we went down to Tennessee. I can't do it again. I've got too much going on. I've got too much on my plate. It's homecoming weekend. We've got group events for Tribods, the student film society that I'm president of, and this, that, and the other thing. So I did homework most of the weekend, and I got almost all of it done. I actually even worked ahead in one class. So,
but Mel and them went down.
But Mel did go. Mel and Jesse went down.
So somebody went
down
and helped out.
Two of her brothers.
Yeah.
One of them, Brother Aaron, obviously went down. And then they packed up the family and brought them back, and they're all back and safe and sound, and hopefully find out about their apartment tomorrow.
They got back a lot sooner than I thought.
Well, I wasn't driving, so.
Sean drives slow.
Well, when we went down last time, we also had that whole
had more to do when you went down.
We had more to do, and there was also I kind of pushed for I'm exhausted, you're exhausted, we're all exhausted, it's been very emotional, let's get a hotel room and sleep for a couple hours, which they did not do this time.
Even
with kids, which kind of surprised me. Because Brother Ern has a six-year-old son and a seven-month-old. Mm.
The kids were only the way back.
How many hours is that?
15.
15 hours.
15 down, 15 back from here.
Wow.
And apparently Hurricane Sandy only rained on them a little bit in Tennessee, so it wasn't too bad. But
it hasn't made that far in yet.
No, not yet.
It's Tuesday, I think, when it makes the worst of its landfall, I think. So.
And that's and even New England is where it's supposed to hit land.
But so they did that, and then tonight we did our, which we think is the sixth annual.
It's the sixth time you've done it.
It's the sixth time we've done it in 7 years.
There was 1 year, yeah. It was a year that Sean was sick. So.
You could even say 8 years, because there's a year he probably thought about it before he actually did it.
No, it doesn't work.
Sean was sick. I was sick a whole year. That year sucked.
I've been here all 7 of the 6 years. Oh, wait. I listened to it on my own the year that he didn't have one because I missed it. So
We did our Wordless listening party.
It. Well, I did. I didn't miss it. Sean missed it. And it's his party. So
that's the way it works, isn't it?
You should have hosted.
Yeah.
I kept waiting for an invite, and I didn't get one. And then he was like, oh, yeah, I'll do one. And then he was sick that week or was not feeling. I don't remember
what happened.
Yeah, it was something that put you out of not being able to do it. And you were like, you sent out a thing saying, okay, guys, I don't think I'm going to be able to do this year. And so I said, well, to heck with it. I'm going to listen to it myself. And I did. I hold up on Halloween night and listen to it.
But every year, it's kind of a tradition. We get together and we listen to the War of the Worlds broadcast. And we've mixed it up a little bit in the last couple of years. This year, which I was really excited that you guys got into, was the WKBW Buffalo version from 1968-ish, which they did for the 30th anniversary. And it was really cool.
You say ish because now you're confusing our listeners. It was from 1968.
It was from 1968. It was produced for the 30th anniversary. Yes. And it was an updated version of the story. And obviously they changed it around. Instead of big band music, it's got the radio station DJs playing things like Three Dog Night.
Sonny and Cher.
Sonny and Cher and whatnot.
Or just Cher, I guess.
And then they interrupt, and obviously it's set in Buffalo instead of New Jersey.
No Sutter's Mill.
No Sutter's Mill. But
Grand Island?
Grand Island, Buffalo. Niagara Falls.
Yep.
A lot of death and destruction.
It was. I was really impressed by this version of it. And you'd been... I think you mentioned it to me last year, even, that this was one of your favorites, and I had never heard it. And there's something about that original 38 broadcast that I mean, because that's the one, that's the iconic one. And I really, really enjoyed the, they weren't Alien Voices at the time, but the Alien Voices version we listened to last year.
The LA Theater Works. The LA Theater Works.
I loved that. It was well done. But it was still in the same vein, very similar to that original broadcast. This one was interesting because it was a modernized perspective, and I really liked that. And I liked the little turns and changes that they did for this one, still staying true to the spirit of the original. So I think one of the things
we talked about is that we liked the fact that this dealt with it more from a news perspective on the invasion, and that we didn't necessarily get the second half of the script where it's Professor Pearson wandering through the ruins of the city and then eventually seeing the bacteria triumph. And in this one, it's pretty much just all Martians all the time.
Right. News reports all the time.
And if you don't know the other stories, you think the Martians just win. Aside from the snippet at the end.
Yeah, wasn't explained in the little narration at the very end.
The impression that was part of... It wasn't part of the 68, it was part of the 71 rebroadcast.
The setup, I think, is from the 71, but they probably did finish that with the... Maybe not. I don't know.
Well, and it's an edited version as well, because I believe
it's cut down.
The original broadcast, they played all of the songs as well. They didn't just completely until they started really get the ball rolling with things are happening, and then they would truncate their songs. And I want to say the original 68 version, they did one of the songs was Hey Jude, because it was popular at the time, and I think due to licensing or rights or something that they got in trouble for.
I'm sure they did that in conjunction with this, so they wound up
changing a little bit for the 71 version. But They tried another one apparently in 75, and it was not well received at all. Mm. Like they were going to, they updated it again and did a completely new version, and it didn't work. Mm. So this is kind of the highlight of WKBW radio.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It was really good. Go Google it or YouTube it and do that.
So. Absolutely.
And then our Tribods organization on campus, we're gearing up. We are actually doing the War of the Worlds, the Orson Welles version, on Halloween on campus. So that'll be kind of fun. So I'll be War of the Worlds out by the time this week's over.
I don't think you can get World of Worlds out.
I don't think I could either. I love it.
So much. All right. Well, let's move on to news.
Our first bit of news is we have an official date and what Doctor Who will be offering for children in need.
Ooh.
November 16th. Doctor Who, featuring Matt Smith, will also bring viewers an extra special prequel to its Christmas special with a bespoke storyline made for children in need and an exclusive preview trailer for the Christmas special, including the first glimpse of the Doctor with his new companion. So November 16th, we will be seeing that.
November 16th, that's coming up.
Yeah.
Pretty soon, that's
exciting. Now, let me ask you, what do you guys think about the... they've certainly done this before where they've done a prequel or they've shown us a trailer, which it sounds like they're doing both this time. But what do you guys think of the prequels? Being the Children in Need trailer. Do you guys like that? Do you like? I mean, one year I think they just showed us the first several minutes of the first episode, which I thought was kind of a ripoff. Nothing to me has been as cool as the, obviously, Time Crash, which features the 10th Doctor and the 5th Doctor. I think that
was
incredible.
I was
going to
smack you if you said something else besides that.
I want something like that again, I think.
Yeah.
I like the idea of the prequel, but to me it's just a little more of a tease that you know we're going to have to wait another month, entire month before Doctor Who returns to our TV screens.
I'd love to see something like Time Crash or something new and original, kind of like, what was it, for Red Nose Day last year?
Time and Space.
Mm-hmm. Or even, it must have been Children of Need then, the Olympics-themed one.
Oh, that's right. Was that Children in Need? I think that might have been.
Something like that where they're cool individual standalone stuff. Right.
That's what I want to see again.
I would like to see that too.
I don't necessarily need a prequel to
the
story because a lot of times they're going to put a prequel out. I mean, they're
doing that anyways.
For episodes. So, I mean, I guess this gives them an excuse, but Children in Need seems to be It's such more of a worthwhile cause. I would like them to put just a little more effort forth and me to get a reward out of it because, a lot of people donate to Children in Need.
Yeah.
And it's a good cause, and I think that it's a nice, warm reward on your investment initially, if you're a doctor.
I would agree with that. So. Look, I want to say last year or the year before, one of the years since I've been clued into it, it was just a trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that it's more than just a trailer. At least there is something new more than promotional footage.
I would agree with that. I'm glad they're doing both the prequel and the trailer because we have had in the past where they've done just a trailer or where they did like the first, I don't know, 3 minutes of the episode, which I think was Into Time. Is that when they even did that one?
I think it might have been.
Yeah. Mm. So, which was a bit disappointing to me, but. Because then when you actually see the episode, well, I've seen these first 3 minutes.
Yeah.
It's almost anticlimactic.
It is.
You should be hyped. Here we are. Doctor Who's back on. I've seen this.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Now, if...
And then you also run into the problem where there's... which one was it that the prequel that we saw, we were almost like, man, I'm glad they didn't... I mean, it was cool. Was it Daleks?
Was it Silent of the Daleks? No, it was the...
Well, those aren't Children in Need prequels. Those are just prequels.
It was the one, the Town Called Mercy prequel, where we saw
The training and everything. And then we decided that would have been really lame if they'd have shown that to us.
Well, it would have spoiled a lot of stuff, I thought.
But then on the same token, if the prequel is good, like when 9 regenerated into 10 and we got that prequel special, that was rather essential.
It wasn't...
It wasn't maybe not essential, but it was. It bridged that gap.
You know
gap
what it was?
More.
That's just it. It wasn't even. I wouldn't even consider it a prequel. It was almost like just the missing minutes that you didn't get to see.
The meanwhile in the TARDIS.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what it felt like was meanwhile in the TARDIS, because you get a little more of that interaction between Tin and Rose. So that was really cool, and it's something that you then you didn't pick up and have already seen when you saw the Christmas special. You didn't see.
Which you felt like you were more prepared for the Christmas special than anything else.
For lack of a better word, you felt a little more exclusive, that you'd gotten a little treat, something more than what somebody that had just finished watching, you know, one season and waited and saw the next season got. You kind of got that special. And that's what I mean. That's what I mean by about, you know, children need, everybody should donate. Don't get me wrong. I don't think that they should bribe you to donate. But I think that it's nice when they offer you something. That's the Doctor Who production staff. That's their way of doing the best for children in need, is giving the viewer something that's a return on their investment. Just a little bit of a nugget of, hey, a special thank you for doing what you're doing and going out and giving something special, something different than what you would normally see. And I suppose this year's kind of that, which is the prequel. But
it's like,
again,
when PBS runs the Pledge Drive, and
sort
for
of
my $60, I get...
Exactly.
Book. Yeah, no,
but with the prequels, I feel like I'm going to end up getting those anyway. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
On my feed from iTunes. So
I totally want new content.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, our next bit of news, we have actually two bits from Russell T. Davies. He was recently on a guest star on the Graham Norton Show, where he discussed Torchwood. The future was questioned.
Of course you do.
You had me doing this. I couldn't do that.
And he said he loved making it in the U.S. and he would have carried on if circumstances hadn't brought him back to a home country, which we kind of discussed when we learned of that. So it's kind of a limbo for him at the moment. So he's working on Wizards versus Aliens. But it's not officially canceled. It's in limbo. So that's where Torchwood is.
Which,
and
quite frankly, here's what I got to say about that. Was there a great number of people that were out there going, "Hey, where's Torchwood? Is it coming back? Blah 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 blah." I mean, I didn't hear the buzz.
Maybe
because I'm not as into Torchwood. I've enjoyed all of Torchwood, but I'm not as into Torchwood as maybe some others. I just didn't catch a lot of people saying, "Oh, it's canceled, it's gone." I didn't catch any of that buzz, so I didn't need Russell to validate it. You know what I mean?
Well, here's the weird thing: is that Starz very much wants another season. They hit a pretty big ratings boost with Torchwood Miracle Day,
did they?
And so they're very much pushing for it.
Okay.
And I know obviously John Barrowman is pushing hard for it. I think it's interesting that Russell said he would have continued, because all the reports that we got originally was kind of he was the one that was like, "I think I'm done with sci-fi. I don't want to."
Yeah,
do it
there
anymore.
Is that.
But then the next show he works on is Wizards versus Aliens. So
he wants to add some fantasy to his sci-fi.
You can take the Jim Henson out of George Lucas, but you can't. How's that expression go? Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it's still there, but I think there's still a mark. Oh, there we go again with the stupid song. I just heard it.
And for the record,
every week,
while it's the same complex, we are recording that. We're
back at the old studio. Yeah, we're back at the old studio this week.
It's a throwback week. I'm in the wrong chair. But yeah, I just
that's completely different.
I don't understand why. I don't understand why there wouldn't be more Torchwood. Quite honestly, you still haven't seen it, so you can't talk.
Although I see,
at this point,
I don't see how it can connect
right.
to Who.
You're right.
Either.
I don't think it needs to connect to Who. I think Torchwood and Who have separated their ways, and they're fine on their way by themselves. But here's the other thing about Torchwood is nobody said Torchwood was canceled.
No.
So when they come out and say Torchwood is canceled, that's when I expect it's canceled. That's why I don't need the validation that Torchwood is on hiatus, because to me, it just has been on hiatus. Until they come back and say, "Okay, we're not doing any more Torchwood," it hasn't been canceled.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That seemed weird to me. What else did Russell say?
Russell also
This is interesting.
And this is very interesting. Insists he won't be writing for Doctor Who on television again. And he says...
Which I kind of... That didn't surprise me either.
But keep going. He says, quote, "Don't ask me about the 50th anniversary because it's nothing to do with me. I'm just a happy viewer now. This will teach me, though. I did ask BBC Books if they fancied a graphic novel. And they went, no. I sat here thinking, I could write a graphic novel. I could even draw the graphic novel. That'd be brilliant. No. There we are, then. I tried."
Now, so okay, here's your problem, Russell.
This comes from IO9. They say they don't know if he was kidding about the drawing, if he even has any drawing skills. But at least writing a new Who story, you'd think BBC would jump all over that.
Here's the problem. You went to BBC Books, which is very much in league with BBC, and they're familiar with how you write. they're very much aware of the... Russell's going to come up with this absolutely fantastic idea, and we're going to say, yeah, it's a go, and we're going to greenlight it. And then 2 months before it's supposed to come out, we won't have heard from him. And 2 weeks before it's supposed to come out, we won't have heard from him. And we'll get it 2 hours before it's supposed to hit the publisher, and the ending will feel a little rushed. Now, Russell, take it from me. If you're really serious, go to friend of the show, Denton Tipton, over at IDW Comic Books. That's the man you need to talk to.
They would love to have some script.
Drop something in order to have a Russell T. Davies Doctor Who comic, I guarantee.
There you go.
Apparently, I'm looking at an article this was sourced from. He started his career in children's TV doing illustrations.
Really?
So apparently...
Maybe he didn't draw one. Maybe he did offer to draw one.
Written and drawn by Russell T. Davies.
I would buy that just based off that.
All right. Oh, that's going to be it for news.
No, wait!
Sean, in perfect Sean fashion, has brought something to the table that we did not get a chance to discuss in the pre-show notes, in the pre-show meeting.
Oh, I thought this was going to be a 30-minute pre-show meeting.
I have one other thing, too, but it's not really news. It should have been in feedback. Or not in feedback. It should have been in what'd you do this week. That's all right. Go ahead.
Christopher Eccleston is playing with our emotions.
Oh.
Apparently, despite
he does this on purpose just to surprise me with some, to get my reaction.
Just to get your reaction.
So I don't get a percolate on it.
No.
He gets the gut reaction from me where I spew bile at him.
Wait, do you find out we're reviewing Zagreus this week?
All right, what's Eccleston playing with our emotions?
While he's notoriously cagey about his time on Doctor Who, he was speaking in a Q&A session at the National Theater earlier this week, where he is starring as Creon in the play Antigone. When asked by an attendee whether he felt he had taken the character of the Doctor as far as he could, Eccleston is reported as saying, somewhat surprisingly, no. A Doctor Who fan was present, wrote about the event on his blog. He felt one series isn't enough to get under the skin of the character, and that if he'd had two or three series, he'd have developed the role considerably. He says if you looked at the other Doctors, with the exception of Tom Baker, you can see them working out how to play the character through their first series because it's such a complex and challenging role. He said several times that there was more for him to do with the character. Now
that's true, but that's not saying he's going to come back or anything.
That you're correct. He is not committed one way or the other, but... And I throw this out there only because I honestly don't believe there's a news story here, but I think it's important to mention because this in my mind is a fairly step. I mean, it's a big step forward from the never bathe in the same river for him to admit that yes, there's more I could do with it, and what I think is very interesting is the specifics on. He'd have developed the role considerably, you know, that he's specifically talking about I could do more with it, not just that any actor could have done it, which is where I think he would have been at a year ago. So with the 50th anniversary looming, I think there is still an open door. Maybe not much of one, but I think it's there.
That's on the same token of all the John Sims is going to return as the Master news, where he was asked, did you like how you portrayed the Master, or along those lines, and he said... Russell told me to play it crazy, so I played it crazy. I personally would like to see it done differently, but that doesn't mean he's going to return.
Right, but I think the John Sim comment even still refers to somebody else playing it differently.
No, that was how he was playing it.
Right, but he said, I would like to see it done differently. Not necessarily, he didn't say, I would like to have played it differently, or I would like to come back and play it differently. That I agree with, that's not what he's saying. But Eccleston is specifically saying, I wish I could have done more with it. I think there was more I could do with it. That leads me to believe that he's at least thinking about it.
I don't have the article in front of me, but John Sims said along the same lines that he wishes he could have done something differently with the Master.
Because I read it and I didn't get that at all.
Here's what it all was.
I agree that he didn't play the Master the way he wanted to. He played it the way Russell told him to in the End of Time. I don't think that would have been his choice.
Here's
as an
what
actor.
It boils down to. Christopher Eccleston is a dumbass. For everything that he has said post Doctor Who. And if he comes back, fantastic. I will like him again. But as far as I'm concerned, the only thing I like about him is the season that he did, and that's it. I don't like him beyond that. He's a dumbass. That's all I have to say. All right. Yeah, I said it twice, Sean.
You don't like him as an actor, or just...
He's a dumbass.
In relation to Doctor Who.
I just said
Who.
It three times. We're done. Moving on.
But why?
I'm just saying, I liked him in 28 Days Later,
Speaking
too.
Speaking of Christopher Eccleston. Hey, what a great segue. I discovered, as I was trolling around Amazon.com, that season one on DVD was out this week, was on special for $22.
I checked today.
Fantastic.
They didn't
so
have any.
Get it. Everybody knows that I've been putting off getting the Doctor Who, the new series on tape because, it's...
What's a tape?
Or on a DVD. A tape? Wow, what is a tape? On DVD because, it's available to me either on Netflix or Amazon Prime, and I haven't felt like the necessity to run out and get it. And, well, probably more so because I'm just a cheapskate. But
ding.
When I saw that it was $22, I went, ooh, sold. So I bought the first series, which still list price at $70, for $22 this week.
I wasn't fantastic. It was $65.
And I'm telling Keith about this. I'm saying, this is great, blah, blah, blah. So I've just bought it from Amazon.com, and it's coming in next week. And yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. So then he gets on Best Buy for some reason.
I was like, I wonder if I can just go pick this up in the store for
And
that
he
price.
Finds Series 5 Blu-ray for $19.99. And I went, you're kidding me.
Which?
So he said, well, they usually honor that in the store. So I went to lunch, and I went to Best Buy, and I got there, and sure as heck, in store on their price tag, $19.99. I got
Best
the
of Britain end cap.
Yes, it was. I got the Blu-ray edition of Series 5. I now actually own a series of Doctor Who from the new series. It's at home on my shelf now. And I got over $20. And Chris Eccleston is coming next week. So.
I have the Best Buy app. Coming
this week. I just found out that they bumped it up because it must have been such a great deal that they ran out because it wasn't going to be here until like next week. So
I have the Best Buy app, which lists additional
ambassadors. So they just paired it up together.
The Best Buy app lists does the weekly ad, but plus some whatever you would see online,
mm-hmm.
and Doctor Who. Shows up this week. So it's still on sale for $20.
So run out if you haven't got it. Best Buy, $19.99. Any other? Dang.
Keith can't go get it because, of course, he'll get one that's got a misprinted disc.
Well, and I have it.
You already own it. But you don't own Blu-ray,
Sarah
right?
owns it.
You don't own it on Blu-ray.
Sarah.
On DVD.
Well, see, you don't own it.
By the way, Sarah owns it. You own it.
Yes. I never went out and purchased it before.
God, I'm blowing through the podcast, Houston. I don't know.
But
and I started before the show.
Sarah and I
well, here,
own
these, would you? These are empty.
Season 5 on DVD. And
it makes it tough to buy.
It does.
Yeah, even though it's Blu-ray and
there's
it
not
looks a, marvelous.
There's not I know how gorgeous it looks because I have 6 on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And I know how gorgeous it is.
Well, it's marvelous.
It's just I don't know if I can
I was hoping they knocked 6 down too since we're
well,
halfway through
part
7,
one and part so. 2 is down.
Oh, is it? It's cheap.
Yeah.
Oh.
You're in the basement, by the way.
I'm in the basement?
Of the box.
I'm in the basement. Oh, yes. Thank you. Oh, wow. Well, we're plowing through these.
That's what happens when you sit around for a table for an hour.
Anyway, that was my exciting news that I should have shared earlier in the show, but the Chris Eccleston kind of brings it around full circle.
I'm glad I can help you.
Thank you.
I thought of one more bit of news also.
Oh, my gosh.
As of 36 minutes ago, it was Maximus' birthday.
As of?
36.
As of 36. So it's his birthday today.
No. Sunday.
Okay. Seven minutes ago, it ended.
Yeah. 36 minutes ago, 37 minutes ago, his birthday was over.
Yes, yes. It was the very last minute of his birthday.
When we were sitting down to record, initially, it was still Matt Smith's birthday.
Unless he was born at 10 o'clock in the morning, in which then he gets the overlap. And then
who counts the overlap?
Matt Smith's birthday was Sunday.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Matt. Happy birthday, Matt.
Yeah. Which he got awarded two different TARDIS cakes. I don't know if you guys saw those.
I didn't.
They had a big celebration.
One of the pictures was on our website.
Yes. But the
I did see that one, there's
a video of the other one where everyone had Matt Smith masks and was wearing when he walked in to see the video.
I think that would be terribly creepy. Even if I was rich and famous, if I went to a birthday party and you all showed up
as me, it was a surprise.
That would just be weird.
Yeah.
It would be like Invasion of the Pod People or something.
All right. Let's move on to feedback.
Feedback. Feedback. We've got some feedback.
Ooh, we went old school with Jeff Hands and everything.
Ooh. It's the old studio.
Yeah. Our first bit. That's what it is. Our first bit of feedback comes from Carrie Nineman. And Carrie writes... Nineman on Kari Nineman ja Hansunzen Karuta Mitten TravelingTheVortex.com. Voy Siocho Kian Barmun.
So we're starting to do this now, huh?
Olen Hoken is Ganswinkendengen. Ersting Grantina ja Swinton CEO Finland. Yerkis Kessa. Tia Derasiana a Tunkumunia Eroku. Kalangunga Yosin, Sahustin Vosnitsnisni, Ja Pa Ten Ota Yatins Vosnitsnisti. That's great stuff. Actually, I agree.
That's great.
Jos Ola Nies Las Ningen Moshna Lesinatora Ja Kieto Tostoda, Jelos To, oh, what's this word? Tosunta Sita. Kenan, Carrie, clfinland.net. Well, thank you, Carrie. That was very nice of you. And I totally agree. That's hilarious.
It's just awesome.
So.
Spot on. Spot on.
And I hope nobody really knows Finnish because they're totally going to call me. No, he did not read that right.
Can you dump that into Google Translate?
I should translate it.
I'm just curious.
Because I don't know what I just read. And that could be bad.
That's probably inappropriate. And you thought DA was bad earlier.
I didn't get that one.
I didn't get that one either.
I sprung that on you guys. It was totally in the Traveling the Vortex bot. Hey, actually, it's in...
TravelingTheVortex@gmail.com?
Yeah, it's in... Okay. No. It's in the... It's on our feedback site. Because this is Here was the other one that I wasn't going to read. This is really in... I mean, I couldn't even... There's
that's
characters.
Russian.
Is it?
I think.
There's characters there I don't even know. I was like, I'm not even going to try that one.
Listener, if you're listening to us in a different language, please write to us in English.
We do try our best.
I disagree. I think if you're listening to us in another language and you cared enough to write, it should be up to us to do the legwork to try and translate what your
feedback. But unfortunately, in today's society, we don't know if that other language is actual feedback. Or spam.
I'm sure.
That's the problem.
I'm certain that it's
That's
spam.
Why it needs to be translated before it comes to us.
I don't think I've ever been spammed in a different language before. I've been spammed a lot, but never in another language. I've been spammed in different countries, but never in another language.
No offense to our Finnish feedback, but our first bit of real feedback comes from James.
Or now you're just being discriminatory. What are you, an isolationist?
I've got this now. Hello, my name is Kerry Nyman, and I would like to tell you how TravelingTheVortex.com can be located even better on Google. I'm a search engine optimization specialist and work in Finland, CEO company. That's just the first line. So I just read out spam in Finnish.
Thanks,
or
Kerry.
Finlander. I don't know. How what is the language? Is it Finnish?
Finnish.
Okay. So I just read out spam in Finnish. No, I didn't even read it in Finnish because I'm sure I was making a bunch of that up. All right, sorry.
Very similar to a Swedish chef speaking in Swedish was Glenn's Finnish.
Well, they're next door to each other, you know. Kerry, yeah, we'd be very interested if you want to send us another email and let us know how we can go about doing that. We'd love to be showing up higher on Google search engines.
Oh my!
Because apparently it's all happening in Finland.
Move along.
Hey, we are an international podcast.
Global,
yes. Either way, same thing.
I can't wait for somebody on the moon to listen to us. I'm totally claiming Universal at that point.
Yes.
Who's our first one from?
James. He sent it in via Facebook. He
said, I'm going to let you read it because I don't have that in front of me.
Hi, guys. I really enjoy your guys' podcast. I'm in the KC Time Lords, and I'm writing about a few debates happening between fans of just the TV series and the ones like me who enjoy Big Finish and other stories. Would like to hear some input on, should we just ignore the adventures outside the TV series? And if so, should we stop reading continued adventures of Star Wars, Star Trek, and so on? The debate happened over the Doctor's granddaughter, and I commented that she returned in the Eighth Doctor's Big Finish Adventures and Earthly Child. And Series 4, the Doctor didn't get a TV series, and I think Big Finish is closest we have to a series, and they should be included with the TV series. And I feel he's getting ignored, and that he shouldn't be. Thanks for everything, James.
Well, first of all, James, thanks so much for your feedback. I did reply on the Facebook webpage to some of this, and I think we've kind of said it before on the podcast that continuity is kind of what you make of it.
Yeah, I agree.
With the particular universes that you brought up, Star Wars, with the exception of Splinter of the Mind's Eye, they've kind of come out and said everything's canon.
Well, some Splinter and a lot of the Marvel stuff.
And some of the Marvel stuff. Which, that's weird, because they count some of the stuff from the comics.
They do.
But yeah, they don't count the Pink Rabbit.
Marvel, right? No, Green.
Jack, or Green Rabbit.
Jackson.
Jackson doesn't exist, apparently. But so they count some of it, and pretty much most everything else they do count. The Star Trek universe has come out and said pretty much it has to be a filmed, televised adventure. So it has to be live action, which automatically discounts the animated series, which upsets me. And it has to be either a series or movie. That's canon. It eliminates all of the books, all of the stuff. And some of that is with reason. I still enjoy them. I still think they're good stories. Should you stop reading or listening because it's not canon? Absolutely not.
Well, here's the thing. If you enjoy it, Doctor Who has never, ever come out on issue on this. They've never come out and said either one way or the other. And so I think that's what lends more to the, you know what, it's whatever your personal canon is. It's whatever your personal... I like to call it continuity is what I like to call it. Because it all can be continuity. And a lot of times you have to kind of stretch your imagination in order to make it work. However, we are talking about a show about time travel, paradoxes, paradigms. I mean, paradigms. Yeah, paradigm. Paradigm.
Dalek paradigms.
Paradigm. But we are talking about a series that deals with time travel. And so there are some things that will work for you and some things that won't. I agree with Sean. I think it's whatever you say.
Having said that, I think all of us around the table have always been McGann defenders. Mm-hmm. In that, yes, I it's sad that he only got the one, and that the Big Finish is unfortunately as close as we've gotten to a continuing series with him. And they're wonderful. The one that you mentioned in particular with An Earthly Child and Susan coming back, I mean, that whole series was fantastic, which guys haven't got to yet, and I'm hoping that we'll get there eventually.
Now, that's on the Eighth Doctor
Adventures. The Eighth Doctor Adventures.
Okay.
Kind of the separate line.
Which are separate from the main line.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were released separately, but they're still kind of...
They fit into the
mainline. They fit into it.
Well, I mean, certainly, yeah. But I mean...
After the Doctor's done traveling with Charlie,
we're not talking about linearly in his timeline. We're talking about in the way Big Finish releases
things. Big Finish releases them, they're not part of the mainline, correct. Yeah. So, but yeah, absolutely. It's fantastic stuff. And so I would encourage anybody who maybe has issue with the fact that... you know, it's not canon, to sit down and listen to a couple of them and kind of give it a spin before you make that determination. If you still don't believe in them after you've listened to them, that's fine. You know, it's your continuity. So,
and they do have some issues. I mean, there are some continuity conflicts, and I think that's part of the reason. But there, I also want to say there's also hope, because there is a 50th anniversary coming out, and Paul McGann could be tapped to come back and reprise his role as the Doctor. So. In some way or form.
So there's that.
Our next bit of feedback comes from Brenda.
Brenda writes, "Dear Vortex Gang, I just got home from New York and I wanted to drop you guys a quick line. First, an apology. I wasn't truly trying to brag last week when I mentioned performing at Carnegie." Brenda, we were teasing.
Yes.
It's awesome.
It's an awesome accomplishment. I mean, come on. I sing with the Atlanta Symphony Chorus and Chamber Chorus, and the orchestra and choruses are invited to perform there every year or two. We are always incredibly honored to get those invitations, and you should be, and we treasure every moment on that great stage. But I'm just one of the 170 chorus members and 100 orchestra players taking part in those performances, so no big deal on my part. I will brag on my colleagues, however, to say that our combined forces have earned over 20 Grammy nominations since the 80s.
No, not nominations, awards.
20, oh, I totally read that wrong. 20 Grammy awards since the 80s.
Wow. Cool.
Now you're bragging.
on the entire group, she says.
Yes.
Rightfully so,
20
too.
Grammy awards?
That's terrific.
Hey, guys, we have a Grammy Award winner listening to our podcast. That's bragging for us there. I'm proud to share the stage with a few of these great musicians. We had terrific performances this weekend. I've attached a few photos for you, which we will, of course, get in the show notes and post on the website. To give you a little glimpse into the fun life of a musician, the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra performed with John Williams earlier this week, playing music from Steven Spielberg films. These musicians, who can play Bach, Beethoven, and Brahms with the best of them, were having a ball with this music, posing for photos with Williams and Spielberg, acting like awestruck kids.
Wait, so Spielberg and Williams were actually there? Spielberg was actually there?
She said posing with photos with Williams and Spielberg.
Brenda, wow! I'm not going to lie, I had a little bit of a nerd gasm.
Brenda, you're awesome.
Last night, as the chorus was lining up to file out onto the stage, we were entertained by the concertmaster playing Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and E.T. excerpts on his Stradivarius violin, circa 1725.
Ooh, wow.
When I complimented him on his repertoire selections, he said he believes that people perform better when they're happy, so he wanted to make us smile. The concertmaster is the one standing beside the conductor in the photo I titled View from My Seat. Who says classical musicians are stuffy? Can I get an amen, Dr. Phil?
Amen, yes.
Amen, Reverend. And to get a little Doctor Who into this feedback, I passed by the cemetery from The Angels Take Manhattan and thought of Amy and Rory as we were driving to and from LaGuardia Airport.
Did a tear fall from your
eye? I wish I had been there last spring when they filmed there. I certainly would have been stalking the location shoots.
Absolutely.
Have a great week and happy Halloween. Brenda in Atlanta.
Yay. Thank you, Brenda. Yes, we will post these photos if it's okay with you. And yeah, I love these. And this must be, so this is the, this is who she's talking about.
View from her seat.
Yeah, that's the guy.
Very cool.
Oh, she also sent in
very, he looks young. A young performer there.
She also sent in a bit of post feedback with a subject line of, I'm so old. She says, a bit of postscript feedback. Just saw it on the website. I'm twice as old as Matt Smith. I feel so old.
Brenda, if it makes you feel better, when he started, everybody was twice as old as Matt Smith. Don't you look at me like that. He was the youngest doctor today.
That's true.
Brenda, thank you so much for those bits of feedback.
Definitely.
Next up is Holly.
Ollie writes, "Hey guys, interesting story. I have to say Django and Lightfoot make for quite an interesting duo. Leela, still getting used to civilization, had me chuckling. I especially enjoyed the dinner scene and the one scene in the final episode of the story with her trying to use a gun and her aim not being so great. Give her some time and I think she'd turn into quite an excellent markswoman. Not quite sure what to make out of Chang, considering he's really not the main bad guy out of the whole thing, but a puppet being used. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts on this story. Keep up the great work. Holly from Wisconsin."
Thank you, Holly. Holly's, of course, referring to this week's Friday Night Who that we just watched, The Talons of Wen Chiang, which we are reviewing tonight.
Our last bit of feedback comes from Chrissy. She says, "Dear Vortex Boys, before I get to my review of The Talons of Wen Chiang, here's a bit of my real-time thoughts on last week's podcast. Because I have nothing better to do when listening to Traveling the Vortex, apparently. I only share this because I thought you would find it amusing. Keith, whatever you do and whatever your interrupting companions say, just keep on plowing through feedback. We all know Glenn and Sean don't listen to you anyways. I kid. And I close up my parentheses with just fine, thank you very much." Wizard of Oz reference. Wondered when that would come up. Weather. You know what? I've got laundry to do. Let me know when you start reviewing The Rescue.
Sorry, Chrissy.
Sorry, Chrissy.
Well, that was entertaining. I hope you found it so. And here's my review of The Talons of Wen Chiang. Oh.
Did we really talk that much about the weather last week?
You were challenging my assertion that this was an Indian summer.
Oh, we did. Yeah, that's right. And it wasn't.
Well, not now.
Two days does not make an Indian summer.
Not now that it's dipped back down to 40. It was 30, what, 31?
It's horrible. Yeah, it's like it's in cold. The 30s today. It's cold. My heat's been running up. Wait, we're doing it again.
Chrissy's got snow in.
She saw snow.
She did. Did you see that? She posted photos on her Twitter feed about dreaming of a white Halloween.
Oh, congratulations on the snow, Chrissy. You don't get much of that in Utah, I understand.
He said facetiously.
Snow is early, however, may be different. She says, "Oh,
we've
tamed my
the weather
giddy
2 weeks in a row,
aunt. That is supposed to be a classic. At the risk of getting my Whovian card taken away,
you want from us,
fandom? Where are your standards?" At the beginning of part three, I was tempted to make my excuses and bail out on Friday Night. It was that dull. Luckily, we were tangenting on all kinds of random crap. Some probably not appropriate for the podcast.
Really?
It's a good thing we were talking about her unmentionables or she would have stuck around.
Oh, yeah, I know what the lady's like.
All right, come move along.
It didn't even feel like Doctor Who. I know the Doctor is supposed to have Sherlock Holmes tendencies, but he isn't Sherlock Holmes. He's the Doctor. Totally different character. There was way too much talking and not enough action in the first four parts. The story did pick up around parts 5 and 6, which is around the point Django and Lightfoot met and became a rather charming duo. But it was that long, hard slog to get there that was obnoxious. Seriously, I'm not impressed. I'm glad I could borrow this one from the library and not have to buy it. I'm not a completionist. It's not my favorite Doctor. Not even really my favorite companion. So I don't care much.
Oh, I was kind of thinking, gosh, she didn't like this. I hope she didn't buy this specifically for Friday.
I think I'm glad in a way. There was a part of me that was very internally upset that we spent the past couple of weeks kind of leading up to the, and then we're doing Talons. We'll let you know what we thought of it. You know. But then there was another part of me that's like, maybe we kind of warned people off enough that they thought, if they're not raving about this one, right, maybe we should.
She finishes up saying, I've got to cut this short. I'm going with my roommate to a sushi party.
Ooh.
I've noticed I have less time to write with you guys since I moved, but I make a point to make time. Later!
And we're glad you do, Chrissy.
Absolutely.
What does one do at a sushi party?
I don't know. Eat sushi?
Oh, that would make sense.
I went to something completely different.
I don't like raw fish, so...
I've tried it.
I've tried sushi. There's some that's not raw fish.
Well, there's some that's actually good. Like,
what do you mean? Susie's my girlfriend. Oh, sorry. That was from a really bad 80s movie called They Call Me Bruce. You've never seen it?
I've seen it.
Have you?
Is that an 80s
he's
movie?
In the bar. He's talking about how he likes sushi. And the cowboy says, what? Sushi's my girlfriend. Well, I like to eat sushi. Won't go any further than that because it's not a rated PG movie.
No,
so
I'm surprised you went there.
I the talons of Wen Chang.
It's a really bad movie. It was one that I saw when I was a kid.
So this is one of those, it was an HBO staple.
And it showed up, yes, it was an HBO staple. And it showed up on Netflix. And I went,
Super Fuzz.
Super Fuzz, yes. Yeah, and by the way, I have too. And,
do you own that one?
Kind of. And I saw They Call Me Bruce show up on Netflix. And I went, I haven't seen that since I was a kid. And I watched it and I went, oh my gosh, this is a horrible movie.
That was a horrible movie in that it was really, really bad and you didn't really know why did I like this as a kid?
Yes.
Or was it horrible in that I can't believe that as a kid I was allowed,
to watch this. Both. I think I watched a lot of stuff on... people have to understand. Okay. Going to tangent here for a moment. Warning.
Back in my
warning, day. Warning. When I was a kid, there was no Watershed on HBO. There was no Watershed Hour on HBO. It wasn't until I got older, probably high school, maybe junior high, where they set anything that was rated R started after 7 p.m.
Right.
Mm. On HBO. Now everything that's rated R or above starts after 7 p.m. Well, I don't know about now. I don't have HBO anymore. But that happened when I was in junior high and high school. So back in the day, you could easily turn HBO on and see a rated R movie in the afternoon. Now, I was a latchkey kid, which means I came home from school, had a key tied around my neck, and let myself in from about the time that I was about 7 or 8 years old. Because when I was a kid, it was safe to walk home and be home by yourself. And I watched my little sister. So we watched a lot of stuff during the day that probably wasn't appropriate, but we didn't really notice, and I know my parents didn't notice either. So this film was one of those ones that
blocked those channels.
I watched it. See, there was no blocking back then or anything. I lived in a small town. We had 11 channels. One of them was HBO. Going back and watched this, I went, wow. A, I should never have been watching this at the age that I was. And B, it's a terrible movie. It's not. I remember laughing when I was a kid. It's not even funny now. I mean, it's just. Anyway, all right. Back to task.
It's funny because I
can't believe word in Chrissy's feedback led me off onto a tangent on They Call Me Bruce.
We were teasing her about her under unmentionables. So I'm just going to go there. I think the sushi party is them eating sushi off a naked body. You've seen those videos or those pictures. That's what I'm saying she was off doing.
I'll buy that for $1.
What else would you do at a sushi party?
I don't think that that's the case. I think that Chrissy is a fine, upstanding woman that would never find herself at a sushi bar eating sushi off of a human body.
Dude, she's a librarian.
Like you see anything.
All right, let's move along to the talents of Wang Chang.
Real quick, it's funny you brought that up because I found out, I don't know, like 3 or 4 years ago that I was a latchkey kid.
You found out?
I didn't know.
Wait.
What I mean by that is I didn't know there was a term for it.
Sean, if you're an adult, You're no longer a latchkey kid.
No. I'm with you. I grew up. I had a key to the house.
You have a right to come home to your own home and have a key to your house.
I grew up in the same era as you did, the same decade, and I had a key to the house, and I came home and let myself in, and I was home alone for good chunks of it because Mom worked second shift, so there was, you know... I went to school in the daytime, and she went to work at night, so we never saw each other.
Right.
I didn't know there was a term for that. Okay. Somebody came up, literally, somebody was talking about...
I just found out a couple years ago I was a latchkey kid.
Yeah. Somebody came up and was talking about latchkey kids, and I was like, what are you talking about? Like, you know, people that went, kids that went home and let themselves in the house. Well, I was one of those. I mean, like, I just didn't see that there was... I didn't know I was part of a demographic.
So you didn't find out you were a latchkey kid. You found out there was a term for what you were is what you found out. I found out I was a latchkey kid.
I found out I was a latchkey kid.
I didn't know I had been letting myself into the house for so many years. Sorry. All right, move along. Move along.
Moving right along.
We haven't done that in a long time.
The talons of Wang Chang. Death stalks the fog-bound streets of Victorian London. Young women are going missing. Horribly mutilated bodies are found floating in the Thames. And criminal gangs terrorize the innocent. At the heart of this tangled web sits the mysterious Lahishan Chang, sorcerer and hypnotist. And his grotesque sidekick, the all too... Sorry.
Can't even say it with a straight face.
I can't. The all too lifelike ventriloquist dummy, Mr. Sin.
I like the dummy.
But he wasn't lifelike.
All right.
He got him wandered around on his own.
Yeah, that was lifelike enough. But go ahead. Sorry. We'll get there. We'll get there.
The doctor dons... deerstalker hat and cape to seek out the sinister force lurking in the shadows of the metropolis. For the talons of Wen Chang are reaching out to shred the human race.
Is that it?
That's it.
I'll do a little dun-dun-dun here. This isn't a horrible story. I think you guys, I wish I'd have been here for Friday Night Who, because it sounds like you guys really, yeah. No, it is not.
It's not that bad. It's not.
It is not.
I don't understand why it's held so high in esteem.
That's my problem with it. It is not. Okay, this story literally comes in on the top five list of most best Doctor Who classics of stories of all time.
It's certainly in top 10 lists.
And
usually it's in top five, but at the very least.
I don't understand that.
I don't understand it.
And I absolutely agree with Chrissy. Somebody's going to take my Whovian card away because this is not even near my top 10. I have seen so many.
And my favorite Baker alone, I wouldn't even think of this.
I like this one better than The Visitation, which we just did a couple of weeks ago. I like this one better than some of the Hartnell stories that we've reviewed. I like this story a lot better than some of even the other Tom Bakers that we've reviewed before. And I love Tom Baker, and I love Leela. This is not a stinker. This is a decent story that, yes, Chrissy is exactly right. There is a lot of nothing going on. There's a lot of talking and very little action. However, I think that I think this needed to be less than it was. It was way too long.
Absolutely.
However, I think there is a lot of buildup that is done well had it been truncated a bit. Had it been shoved down into just a couple of episodes instead of 1 through 4 before it finally gets interesting, I think that the buildup to this is done.
Well, at the very least,
the buildup for the story is done well. It's just dragged out too long. That's the problem with
this. Yes. At the very least, 1 through 4 should have been down to 1 through 3. And
maybe
then,
even 1 and 2 could and have then, been better set up for this.
Maybe.
It's a 4-part idea masquerading as a 6-part story.
There you go. Exactly. I don't think it could have been less than 4, but it definitely did not need to be 6.
You know what it is? It's Tom Baker's era channeling Pertwee's.
I don't see the correlation. You'll have to go a little further.
Because Pertwee had the longer episodes that often felt dragged out. And this is that just set in Tom Baker's era. With a different doctor and a different companion.
Yeah, I guess so.
This was, I mean, we got, what, 15 minutes of the magic show? Really? That is something...
Okay, but that's one of the more enjoyable bits, though. Well, because the doctor's having so much fun at Li Xing's expense. When you get the great bit with the card, and he's moving it in front of his face, and then he comes down to help him out on stage, and they put him in the cabinet. They spin the cabinet around, and he walks off through the back door before they can stick the swords in it. Because he ain't stupid. I mean, there's a lot of fun moments in that. And
a joke that I never caught as
a kid, when the doctor walks off stage, and Xing turns to the audience and goes, "One of us is yellow." And I went, I can't believe they let that fly.
No, I'll tell you what. There is a lot of racial...
Oh, there is.
What, especially is considering... Is it epitaph? Is that what I'm looking for? It's not really racial slurs. I mean, they are. But
stereotypes?
Stereotypes. There's a lot of racial stereotypes. Well,
given the time this is set.
And not to mention that there's hardly an actor in here that is Chinese.
Yes. Aside from the Foot members.
There are a couple of them.
I did
Chang
not know
or the, a.k.a. The, John Bennett?
I did not know he was not Chinese as a kid.
Really?
I totally did. I knew there was
good makeup on him.
Yeah. That he just didn't look right. And it wasn't until we watched it that I was like, wow. That is totally an English white guy dressed as a Chinese.
Yeah.
Well, and especially now, looking back with hindsight of other actors, I mean, he totally gave the feel of, I'm blanking on the name.
Lo Pan,
yeah.
James Hong.
Totally gave that feel to him. Or even Kill Bill Master. That wasn't Lo Pan.
No, that was David Carradine.
Well, that was David Carradine. He's not Asian either.
The other, no, that's Bill.
Oh, that was Bill. The Bill's master. Bill's the one that when she goes to, yeah, right, I gotcha. Got
the constant
when she goes swiping. To, right,
yes.
Right.
He gives that feel to it, which is kind of the cheese.
He's
Chinese.
He's phenomenal in the part. I really think so. I think he's the strongest part of this. In fact, that's one of the reasons I don't like the story. Because he's not the bad guy.
Well, he comes across sinister, but yeah, he doesn't end up being the bad guy.
He's serving a master, and he becomes
a puppet.
That all of a sudden has defanged him.
See, I kind of like that idea.
Unlike Vader being the puppet, if you will, to the Emperor in Star Wars, this guy's just kind of, you're just out there doing the dirty work, and this guy's the really sinister
one. And even though Vader is the puppet to the Emperor, Vader still has that very evil bad guy feel, but it's not cheapened when you find out that his strings are being pulled. In this one, it does. It feels
I think that's because they end up dropping him completely.
That's another problem.
That's the problem.
It feels like they cast him aside, and then we're going to focus on the real evil here.
Magnus Greel, the real evil, isn't.
No.
He's kind of lame as a villain.
The character falls down certainly at the end. It really does.
I mean, and, you know, the fact is that he's dying, and you know he needs to do this. And Sin is up in the dragon controls, shooting everything under the sun except what he's supposed to be.
You're eating a little Chinese dish.
Very appropriate.
Sean went and got barbecued weenies that we've been eating all night because he had this party earlier tonight. And now he's eating them out of this little Chinese bowl.
Would you like an Oriental bowl for your?
I don't need an Asian bowl. That's not a saucer, is it?
No, it's a bowl.
Okay.
Although they're making me hungry.
He chastised me once because I used his saucer as a salsa bowl.
you remember my Christmas present of the English mug and saucer from you?
I got it for you.
Somebody filled it with salsa.
I thought it was a bowl.
You even saw him open the gift.
Not the coffee cup part of it.
It was a year ago. It wasn't under the cup.
I had you have defiled the saucer moment. I mean, it was bad.
What'd you think of the big giant rat? What'd you think of that?
Oh, God, the giant rat. I didn't have...
Yes, I would like an Asian bowl with some...
I'm going to get some weenies.
I'll take some, too.
Talk about the rat, Keith. What'd you think of the rat?
When they were doing the close-ups of the rats to make them look big, I didn't have a problem with it. And then when it actually became a big giant rat...
A big giant rubber rat. I don't know if it's there this year, but last year, the Halloween boutique, which was over... Was it on Wanamaker last year?
Mm-mm.
Where was it last
year? North Topeka.
So it was there north last year. No, yeah. No, it's there this year. It was over where Going Bonkers is this year. Last year.
I thought that was 2 years ago.
Oh, maybe it was. Maybe I just didn't go last year. But anyway, wherever it was, at Halloween Boutique 1 or 2 years ago, they had a big giant rat in there that I swear to God, if it wasn't $45, I would have bought it because it reminds me of the rat.
Was it fuzzy?
And it, no.
I was impressed
it was
by
not,
the...
Yes, it was not fuzzy like that one. It's all rubber, but it has the same texturing.
Yeah.
And it looks very similar. And I literally almost bought that rat just to say, hey, I've got the rat from the Talons of
One Giant. I was impressed.
It's not near as big, but it's pretty good sized.
Really, when it was attacking Leela, I was fairly impressed by the quality that they had this rat at. And they hinted at this giant rat
wrong.
To come.
It can't take it anymore. Wrong.
It could have been worse. It could have been all rubber and giant. They at least tried to add the fur. It wasn't scary.
It could have been covered in green paint.
It was rubber covered with fur or seaweed.
Well, yeah, it could have been a murka. I mean,
it could have knocked down a foam rubber door.
It's slightly murka-esque.
It is a murka quality monster.
what saves the rat?
We're like varying degrees on this rat. You're like absolutely murka. I'm like, yeah, it's murka-esque. And he's like, no, it actually looked pretty good.
Isn't on screen as long as the murka.
I would agree.
I disagree there.
No.
And here's my reasoning. Here's my reasoning.
It's not as they do a good job of having it.
But they know this looks like crap.
And knowing. Yeah.
So they don't put it on camera as much as they can.
Why put it on camera at all? Why not just allude to the fact with a giant shadow? Why not just. Why not hear the scurrying and the squeaking and have somebody turn in fear and then go, off camera? There are so many different ways you could have done this.
That would have also saved money and put more money in the sin.
Jaws came out 2 years before this. Spielberg showed you how to do it. You don't show the monster. Genius. But you did it anyway. Murka is better than this rat. And here's why.
Oh, I don't know if I'd go that far.
Murka,
oh, my God.
The Murka at least showed some inventive creativeness with creating a monster.
Well.
This is a big, giant rat. And it's not done very well.
It's almost anthropomorphized.
It was not anthropomorphized.
No, it was just a ginormous rat. The guy even says it. Oh, I've got this experiment, and I grew it to big. What does that have to do with anything else in the story? You have
me. Whoa. No. They make reference to the fact that that's one of the things that the god,
Wen Chang,
one of his talents was abundance. And was things that he had or created were bigger than what would normally be. So that lends to the credence that the rat is large.
There's nothing in this secret under the theater lab that says make rats bigger machine.
Because this isn't why
it has nothing to do with
it's not Wang Chang.
It has nothing to do with the experiment that ruined his face.
That's the illusion they're setting up, though.
He's just playing
off. So I buy into the giant rat because of that.
Until you learn otherwise and then you go, hey, wait a minute.
That's true. It does make you pause to think later.
The guy looked through a book of old Chinese mysticism and went, Wen Chiang, God of Abundance. Hey, I could get a giant rat. That'd work.
I still don't understand where the talons come from. Is that from the rats? The rats' talons?
The rats have talons.
The rats don't have talons.
These talons?
The dragon, I think, had talons.
Yeah, dragons do have talons.
But we didn't see a dragon.
Yeah, well, that's what Sin was driving.
A dragon. Dragon. I swear I saw a dragon. It came back around anyway. Sorry, listeners. That was a pre-show reference.
We were singing that earlier. No, when
the dragon gun, yes.
Yeah, well, it was in the head of the giant dragon. Beware the eyes of the dragon. That looked painful. You're all right.
It's all right. Go ahead.
There's nothing good about the rat. There is absolutely nothing good about the rat.
To be fair to this story, Leela is great.
Until she encounters the rat.
Why are you lighting your mouth on fire?
She's great until she encounters the rat. And then, for the first time, and if I'm not mistaken, the only time...
This is the third story.
She's turned into shrieking violent. Yep, yep, yep,
yep. But this is only the third story.
But so what?
There hasn't been a status quo for Leela yet.
Yes, there has. The first two stories. Four parts each, eight episodes. She's been strong. She's been independent. She's been fierce. She's been feisty.
How many times has Sarah Jane done this? She's gone several stories without screaming, and then screams in a story. You can't discount Leela for this.
It's the only time it happens in Leela's entire run.
Well, having not seen all of Leela's run, I can't.
Now I understand it. I understand she does scream in more than New Big Finish. Somebody brought that up on Friday night. But in the televised stuff, it's the only time it happens. And she's reduced to this not once, but several times. She encounters a giant rat and screams and runs away from it.
Well, apparently she's afraid of rats.
She is a huntress. She could be all over this thing. She could have jumped up and rid this thing like a mastodon.
What happened to her Janus Storm? She uses it early on. You only get one shot with it, I guess.
Apparently she only brought one Thorn
well,
with her.
Yeah, obviously that was true too.
That outfit had big enough pockets. She could have loaded those. She could have loaded the MC Hammer pants full of Janus Thorns to go down in the sewer.
But as Chrissy pointed out,
except it was
her
a really small manhole cover. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I did.
She never got down there in the big old dress.
He got down there. I'm like, there's no way Baker's going down that hole. It's just not happening.
Well, that's why he removed his cloak when he was going down.
Because that cloak was going to bog him down. So
well, yeah.
All right.
But Leela, regardless of the screaming, had some great moments of trying to be civilized.
She did. And those are standout moments.
It's a nice playoff that you've taken this savage from the future,
but
to show her ancestry, and you dropped her into Victorian London, and then suddenly she's having to play a different role than what she's used to. I liked that. I liked the exploration of that character that way.
But part of me has trouble rationalizing this with Robots of Death, where she didn't seem to struggle as much in that story as she does in this, of what's going on.
No, you've got a good point there. She doesn't.
And that comes before this. So it's like, this should really come before that. This should be the next place the doctor takes her.
On the flip side of that, though, that she has thrown so quickly into robots and the situation that's going on there, that she's really kind of forced to just grasp and bring in everything that's going on in Robots of Death. Whereas in this one, because of the buildup, because of the doctor purposefully is introducing her to this time, she's having to adjust and relate to what's going on here in this time. So I'm gonna have to come down on that side of robots is such a quick, clean, it's happening so fast. She's not forced to fit into a certain character.
Well, and there's
in
less,
that.
There's
she's
less
just,
of a stereotype.
She's just dropped
for her to
into
fit
something
into.
That's going on. Exactly.
Yeah, there is
here
that.
She is dropped into a stereotype of something that she that is expected of her as a woman of the time. And so that's why I think there's more of a struggle here. She's trying to be something she's not, whereas in robots she's not being forced to do that. So
and I like how the doctor tried to play it off too when he's if she was found in a basket floating down the river. and then he smiles like, nobody's going to buy that. Nobody's going to take me seriously on that one. And Lightfoot takes him. You're a doctor. Okay, obviously. They found her, you know.
Which Lightfoot and Django.
I love the
highlights of this story.
Django. And Lightfoot.
Highlights of this story.
They totally should have brought those two together much sooner than they
yes.
did.
Yes. And it is. That would have helped for.
It's completely understandable why they end up getting their own series in Big Finish later because they really just have this wonderful chemistry together. Yeah, and it's potential at that time because there's two episodes there together.
Exactly. There's not enough there to build anything, but you can see it.
But you can just see that there's something more there that they wouldn't expand on. And I'm excited to listen to the Jago and Lights, but. Stuff later on.
It almost feels like once they got them together, that maybe they rewrote. Maybe this was only going to be a four-parter, but then they brought them together and went, "Oh no, we need more. We're not going to cut anything we've already shot." But let's go. And I mean, it almost
that
felt like
be.
let's just because they put them in a lot. They get their own capture and escape and recapture,
which was fantastic.
The dumb waiter and.
I was surprised they both climbed into the dumbwaiter at the same time.
Yeah.
I would have. I looked at our group and went, no. I'm sorry. Glenn and I are not squeezing into this little box and pulling ourselves up on the road. You go first, you meet me at the top, and then I'll come up after you first.
Then you pull me up.
No, because then I'd be going, no, you go first.
Right, well, I'll go first. It doesn't matter. But just one at a time and then. They're so good together, and they're so much fun, and we spend so much time with them not being in the same room. It's like, hurry up and get together.
And when you know how good of a pair they are, it makes it even more excruciating watching those first four episodes before they get together. So I'm going to go back to something that Chrissy said, and I partially agree with her that they put the Doctor in this Sherlock Holmes character, and he and Sherlock are so much different. However, I do appreciate the concept of the Doctor is and has said he is such a Sherlock Holmes fan that I love that he was able to kind of step into one of the characters that he appreciates in literature and wanted to and was able to kind of go about things the way that Sherlock Holmes would have. And so I appreciate that about this story. Yes, I agree that the Doctor and Sherlock Holmes are two very different characters.
Yes. Yeah, they are.
And the way that they deduce things. But this was a way for the Doctor to maybe kind of live out a sort of his fantasy. And so I appreciated that about the story, that was the approach he was taking in all of this, was the Sherlock Holmes style of investigation, looking into things. It was something that he was trying to fulfill in his life. So while I agree with her that they're completely different, I like the idea of a Holmes story for the Doctor because of his appreciation of Sherlock Holmes and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
It makes me wonder, and I mentioned this on Friday Night Who, because Tom Baker supplied the outfit.
I think he's a fan himself.
He showed up as the Doctor.
Played Sherlock. I was about to say he has played Sherlock Holmes.
The only thing they added was the scarf. The rest of his normal attire is stuff he had in the closet.
Yes.
Knowing that he is that kind of an eclectic clothes, I don't want to say clothes horse, but that he would have that particular outfit in the closet. I think it's very likely, I haven't been able to find it anywhere, that he brought this outfit when they said, we're going to do this Sherlock Holmes story.
And that's possible.
I have it. And he went home and showed up in this outfit.
That's certainly possible.
I just, in my mind, that's how I've constructed
it. It could have been him pushing writers all along, too, to say, hey, I'd like to do a Sherlock Holmes story.
Yes. Yeah.
What can we do? And so that's very good.
And again, I don't want to be totally
unfair. I looked at the I think he's on the commentary for this one, isn't he? Did I read that?
Nope.
I don't want to be completely unfair to the story. We mentioned that this setup.
I'm wrong.
Louis Jameson, John Bennett, Christopher Benjamin, Philip Hinchcliffe, and director David Maloney.
Okay.
The setup is really wonderful. Part one is phenomenal.
I would agree. I agree with you.
It's almost Unearthly Child all over again. It's got such a strong. We've got this atmospheric fog. We've got great sets again.
Mm-hmm.
Even Keith commented on that.
Even the sewer sets were impressive.
The sewer sets. The
labs. The sets throughout this whole thing are impressive.
Yeah. The Chinese with the
theater wasn't as impressive in my opinion because they could have just literally gone and filmed in a theater. They didn't have to build that.
I don't know if they did.
I don't think they did. That's why it wasn't impressive.
Theater looked fine. So
yeah,
it looked fine. It just wasn't the impressive. Oh wow, they built.
Well,
that.
I meant all the behind the scenes, backstage up in the rafters the chase sequence that the Doctor.
I got the impression
the trap door down below
swinging from the rafters. Yeah.
The trap door, yes. Rafters, I thought was actual theater. They filmed in on location for that.
Could be. But and then the underground thing with the dragon, wherever that was set, it's another one of those. Wow, you guys, this looks great.
Maybe that's what lends to fan appreciation. That's what I go into this trying to find the things that fans like about this. Why is this always on the top 10, top 5 lists of all time Doctor Who? And I went into it this way, trying to look at those type of things. Maybe that's one of those ones because it does have some very stunning sets. To me, that's not enough to put it in the top 10. But
No.
It's just me. Sorry. I interrupted you again.
Mod 1 Undead.
I apologize.
Great sets. But
no, exactly.
That hotel.
There you go.
that hotel, that space hotel they filmed at. but you know what else had great stunning sets? Logan's Run. That doesn't mean it was great.
I like Logan's Run.
Well, I do too, but doesn't mean it was great. There's just, I don't know. Is there something that's not right?
I think the problem is the fact that the first four story episodes don't feel like Doctor Who. And then it gets to five and it feels like Who again?
Maybe, because we finally get the alien influence in historical times.
Two through four don't feel like Who. I would agree with that.
I would agree with that to a point. I don't think that the first four don't feel like Doctor Who, because I think Tom grounds that in the story. And maybe it's because he's trying to be so Sherlockian. But I think that it still feels very Doctor Who to me. It's just there's something about it that it's almost like I don't care about the story until we get to the fifth story. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. There's no real threat.
Exactly. Well, there is, but it's okay. Here's what it is. It's a normal drama threat. It's a murder mystery.
Yes.
But it's not, there's no, because we don't know of the alien influence, the only thing we've got going for us now is the giant rat. I mean, because we get that at the end of the first episode, but it could be anything at that point. I mean, it could be any regular drama. Again, I think that's the point of the story, is that it's a Sherlockian mystery, and so that's why we have to set it up that way, and then we introduce what's going on later. But I think that's why it doesn't feel so Doctor Who, is because we've got kind of this standard drama going on. It could be any Agatha Christie or any Sherlock Holmes mystery going on at that point. So I think maybe that's part of it.
And then it was telegraphed about, I think a lot of the plot points were telegraphed in this story also. The cabinet that they're looking for. Oh, yeah, of course, it's going to be at Lightfoot's house. That was painfully obvious.
But it's building the mystery, too.
It's building the mystery, but it's...
It's setting that up to say, okay, pay attention to this. You know, that's kind of what they do.
And I never like it when they do that.
Well...
It's also
old school, though. They don't do that so much anymore.
That's
you
true.
Notice that in storytelling? Yeah. That's old school storytelling.
I don't think I've ever liked that in storytelling.
It's also a bit of a MacGuffin from the standpoint that we spend so much time looking for the cabinet, and then we finally get it, and it doesn't do anything.
Yeah, good point.
Well, they never got to use it.
That's just it. We've set this thing up as the cabinet to be the thing, and then he gets the cabinet, but he lost the key. The doctor's got it. It's like, oh, okay, cool. You know, at some point in time, we're going to get the key on the cabinet, and we're going to see some major stuff happen.
Good point.
And it doesn't.
Yeah.
It never gets to that point. And I felt cheated. I wanted to see some razzle dazzle.
Yeah.
And where's this threat?
They've reached their budget.
We chose.
No, I mean, you don't even have to give me some fancy special effects on it. I want to see what happens when he gets the cabinet, and you don't.
And we,
it's a convenient plot excuse for them to go chasing Lightfoot, you know, around his house, and oh, let's beat up Leela again.
Spend two episodes trying to get the casket,
because once again,
and that extends the story.
Yeah, but once again, you know, we get Leela, and she's in there, and we get a great scene with her. How do we defend the house? I've got a bat, a cricket bat. I've got a golf club. I've got to try and figure out how to throw the golf club.
Yeah.
Well, she's thinking it's a spear,
club.
You know.
Yeah.
And what happens? Snucked up behind, beat over the head, kidnapped.
Yeah.
Really?
Disappointing.
Yeah.
Let me put this out there, because I'm trying to take a different approach with this. We put this as our Halloween episode this year.
We did.
Does it deliver as the typical Hinchcliffe, not horror, but maybe, Hinchcliffe horror or thriller style story? Does it work for a Halloween story? Because I
don't think so.
I do.
But then again,
last year we used Brandon Morbius and we used Horror Fang Rock.
Which isn't a Hinchcliffe.
We did one other.
Seeds of Doom.
Seeds of Doom. And we did those because...
too much.
Well, we did those mostly because of the style and title that they were as well. However, we put this one as our Halloween special this year. Is it rightfully so a creepy story that fits our Halloween special ideal?
I don't think so.
Why not?
It's
too obvious, right?
There's not enough creepy to it either. Yeah, it's got a great atmosphere, but that doesn't make it creepy.
But is atmosphere enough to make it our Halloween special?
No, it's not.
Okay. Sean?
I think it is. I think it does. In addition to the atmosphere, I think it does have the creepy. I think, unfortunately, a lot of the creepy doesn't wind up materializing. But we've got girls missing that are being apparently drained of their life essence by this thing. We've got a midget walking around with a knife and a bloody hand. You know, that's creepy. He's a ventriloquist dummy, but he's on his own. Again, probably poorly realized when we get this lame explanation that, oh yeah, he's a homunculus robot from the future that apparently disappeared with a pig heart running the thing. What?
Yeah.
You know, it just... okay.
Good use of the word homunculus.
I guess it's better than a spirit-possessed dummy. You know, it lends it more of the Doctor Who explanation of what's going on. But I think there's a lot of stuff in there. It falls apart in the latter acts for it. But I think, again, the setup is great. I think there is a lot of horror-type elements. And interesting enough, it's the last story that Hinchcliffe produced. Horror Fang Rock is the next story, but that's not one of his. Right, I totally would have thought that would have been one
but
of
it's,
his.
It feels more like one of his than this to me.
Yes, it's still that we consider that Hammer horror feel, which I think is what Hinchcliffe brought to the series. So I think that's why we lump Horror Fang Rock in there, even though he did not produce that particular episode.
We brought this up during Friday Night Hoop of the Prestige, and this gave a very Prestige feel to it. Would you consider The Prestige a good Halloween or horror film? It has the atmosphere. This has the exact same atmosphere as The Prestige.
I think there's a...
That's where...
I think
that's
there's
what
a
I mean
difference
by atmosphere.
Between horror film, because I consider Hammer horror films, but because of the style it is, not because they equate with, like, Friday the 13th or The Nightmare on Elm Street or those type of series. Because they equate to that kind of gothic, eerie feel, which is I fall down on the side of what Sean's saying is that this one does. Ironically enough for me...
But you could almost set anything in Victorian time and have
no,
it that,
I don't
give
think
that
it has
feel.
To be Victorian, though. Ironically to me, my least favorite part of this series, episodes 2 through 3, 1 through 4 feel the most... like that Hammer horror style or mystery or Victorian thriller.
It feels Victorian thriller.
It's
mystery,
not until
we
get to 5-6, which I enjoy better as a Doctor Who story, but I would, based on his explanation, I agree that they do. It does feel like it fits in our Halloween horror, not horror, eerie story telling. I think then when it falls out of that is 5 and 6 when we start to get the alien influence or the outside influence. And
that's where it feels the most like a Doctor Who story.
Exactly. Then it suddenly becomes a Doctor Who story again. So I agree. I'm glad that you picked this one for our Halloween special. But I fall down on the side of Keith as well where I can see where we get out of that.
Especially
later
compared
on in the
to
story.
Last year's Halloween stories.
Which were all
this
very,
is
very,
very much less.
Very much more so
well,
like
keep,
the Hammer
keep in mind,
Horror.
Too, that we're suffering a little bit of a unfair yoking of the two, because not only did we have three stories last year for Halloween versus the one, we had three, in my mind, really good ones.
Yes,
three
yes.
of the best, in my mind. We had Brandon
in your mind. you got when you
in
said when you said best, I think you lost me there.
Brandon Morbius is
Brandon Morbius,
fun
one
story.
Of my favorites. Absolutely,
Seeds of Doom.
I
didn't appreciate it as much until we watched it last year, yes.
And then Horror Fang Rock.
Which is not one of my favorites, but
I
enjoy
really
it.
Enjoyed Horror.
I enjoy it. I wouldn't mark it in my top 10 or anything like that, but
yeah, for
I would okay. own that before
I
own this one.
I like
one.
It because it's Tom, but beyond that, I don't know. Oh, it's better than Talons. Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong at all.
So In that regard, I think that, you know, so we're putting three, count them, three that are of this quality versus Talons, which is of this. So there's some uneven yoking there, I think. Yeah. But well, at the same true. Time, like I said, I really wanted to do something that was in fitting with the mood, something creepy, something, and this, to me, is
well,
a creepy
Well, it had a
story.
Victorian atmosphere.
It did, well.
It was set in Victorian time.
How many times can we say Victorian atmosphere?
I didn't think From Hell was scary either, or creepy.
But see, I would think that's totally appropriate for a Halloween show. That actually has the same atmosphere as this.
Yeah, that's because it's Victorian.
No, I'm not.
Whenever Hollywood or anything portrays Victorian in London, that's how they portray it.
They default to the Jack the Ripper time.
That is what they do, which they make reference to, and I'm proud of them for not tying it to Jack the Ripper.
I don't know. It might have improved a little bit if it had been.
Well, from my
point, from my
perspective, Madame Vashti already took care of him.
That's true, too.
Yeah, right.
Because she's roaming the streets of London.
In Victorian England. There's,
but that's just Victorian England at the time. I mean,
ironically enough, our Christmas special will be set in Victorian England. Ooh. So.
There's so much that... I'm going to talk about the stuff that I like for a little bit, because I feel like I've been really, really down on this. I do like the atmosphere. I do like the sets. I do like the performances. I think... top to bottom, I think they've got a great cast here, with the unfortunate maybe exception of Wen Chiang. I mean, the guy, like I said, Magnus doesn't do anything. He is kind of worthless. And then
when you see his face for a brief second.
Yeah. It's ineffectual, I think.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, most of the cast also showed up or reappears. Wen Chiang or Magnus was the voice of Morbius in Brain of Morbius.
Right. Oh.
Where'd it go? John Bennett had previously appeared in Doctor Who as General Finch in Invasion of the Dinosaurs.
Okay.
Christopher Benjamin had previously appeared in Inferno as Sir Keith Gold, which we haven't reviewed yet.
Right.
And would return to play Colonel Hugh in The Unicorn and the Wasp.
I did know that. I knew that.
I think we talked about that when we did. You know that was Jago. So there's a lot of crossover there. We talked about Lopan, which you know obviously is a callback to. We did a lot of cross referencing on Friday night, but we mentioned Big Trouble in Little China, and he does. He's doing a great Lopan, and I think that's one of the things that's so frustrating.
Which Lopan came later.
Well, yes, it's that same style character. And I think, again, that's why it just ultimately is so disappointing that he's so bought into the story.
He fully believes this is what
that Magnus
Wang
has told
Chang.
Him. Yeah. He's hook, line, and sinker. Yes, Lord.
Yes, absolutely.
And he's so deliciously sinister and evil without being the grand, over-the-top scenery chewer. And I think that's part of he's doing villainy right, in my mind.
That's the allure of the character, is the fact that he is doing villainy right.
Versus
right.
Magnus, who really comes across as almost an Omega-type, mm-hmm. I'm in a mask, yeah. I'm going to rage in my, you know, my cage kind of thing. This was one that surprised me. With the credits rolled, and Deep Roy played Mr. Sin. Do you know who Deep Roy is?
I don't know.
Deep Roy is, at least to me, he's become a very, very well-known actor. You probably recognize him most when he's not in his prosthetic makeup. He played the Oompa Loompas, all of them,
in the new Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
But he's been in tons of stuff.
Really?
And is reused a lot by Tim Burton. He was in Big Fish. He played the dwarf at the circus.
Okay.
I mean, he's just one of those guys that's been around. And I went, oh, my God, and Roy Deep. Because I became a fan of his late and then started to realize how much stuff he was in. So when I saw his name on Doctor Who, it was like, this is awesome. And even though he snorts like a pig as Mr. Sin, that's... And then I go back to the things that I don't like about it. There's some great one-liners. I love the Doctor's quip about the gun that was made in Brighton. Yeah. Of course, it's gonna work.
Right.
You know, we have no problems there. And for some reason, all those times when we talk about, oh my God, the Doctor picked up a gun. For some reason, when you have a deerstalking hat on, you're okay with it. He's got the biggest gun in the county.
He's not dressed like the Doctor, so.
That lends to it.
That's one of the reasons why I feel that this is kind of so less a Doctor Who story. Did you know this is the only one out of Tom Baker's entire run he doesn't wear the scarf?
Oh, yeah. No,
it is the
either one. I didn't notice the scarf.
It is the only. I mean, now, we've had episodes where he'll lose it or he uses it as a rope or something else.
Right.
I mean, he always gets it back. and puts it back on. This is the only cereal in the entire run with no scarf.
I totally see that now, but I hadn't thought of that.
A couple of interesting tidbits that I found.
I keep looking up there and seeing Louise Jamins.
A couple of interesting tidbits I found on Wiki, the source of all knowledge. Of course, in addition to the Baker outfit, because they're doing the Sherlock resemblance, Leela's not shown wearing her leathers. According to the information on the DVD release information track, the change in costume was supposed to be permanent because the Doctor and Leela had established a Professor Higgins Eliza Doolittle style relationship. And so he was going to be kind of the mentoring, you know, right, to the student. But they later wound up dropping that idea.
Well, because they had a bunch of horny high school kids watching the show to see Leela in her leathers.
Ding.
Which she eventually strips down to her knickers.
Yeah.
In this.
What was he saying last night?
Pantaloons.
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 I'm sorry.
To her pants.
That outfit is far more pantaloon than it is knicker.
Not for Victorian time.
All right.
Well, ask Chrissy. She's an expert on
Sean, what else you got?
What do we got here? There are several Sherlock Holmes references other than the outfit. Professor Lightfoot is designed specifically to be Dr. Watson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He has a housekeeper called Mrs. Hudson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the doctor at one point says, "Elementary, my dear Lightfoot."
Yes.
So those are some fun ones
there. I missed that line. I didn't catch it.
No. There's also the great bit, which I liked, when the doctor makes reference to having gone to China. And he says, "I haven't been to China in 400 years, which
yeah,
matches up with Marco Polo.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of little things to like in this.
That's right.
Leela, again, all of the civilization stuff where, you know, she's asking about why you're lighting fire to your mouth. You know, the dinner scene.
Right.
And Lightfoot's reaction when he's like, picks up the plate.
And him just going along with it.
Her, puts the plate down and decides, "When in Rome, you know, let's just go for it. Right, and he's such a cool character at that moment.
There's a napkin.
Yeah.
Yes.
Don't use the tablecloth. Those little moments, though, that are fun and light and I love. And I think those are what rescue this story is. The fact that there are a lot of those little moments that I watch and I think, this is just fun. This is fun to watch. They're fun little moments. And I think that's what makes everything so much better.
The irony of the tablecloth.
I think that's what pulls you through the down points.
That could be too,
I think so too. The irony of the tablecloth is that he rescues the tablecloth from Leela. He says, "Use the napkin, don't wipe your hands on the tablecloth." And then I believe it's the next episode where the doctor has drawn a map of the sewer system
on the tablecloth. Yeah.
I don't like the way they've defanged Leela in this one. The more I think about it, the more it bothers me. Every single scene or chance they get to treat her as a damsel in distress, because we're in Victorian London, they treat her like a damsel
in
distress.
They do that, and they do that because it's the Professor Higgins' Liza Doolittle thing. To try to change Leela a bit, and it almost goes too far in this story.
And the first time when she very slyly substitutes clothes for the hypnotized girl and gets down into the sewer, mm-hmm, and she could have strangled him to death, doesn't. And then you can almost forgive that one because she goes to rescue the girl.
Right, right.
So it's like, I've incapacitated you just enough that I can go and move on. Obviously didn't work out, and she winds up facing the giant rat and everything. But then she gets another shot at the guy, and she apologizes to the doctor. "I had the chance to kill him, and I didn't. I blew it." So she gets another shot, and you're kind of thinking to yourself, well, no way is she going to screw this up twice, right? And she does this lunge at him and hits his shoulder really badly, awkwardly, just so that he can turn the tables and capture her again! And it just grates on my nerves that they've done this to her. It's so uncool. Especially Magnus, because he sucks as a villain. I keep going back to that. It's just nothing happening here. I want to talk a bit about reception, because, again, we've talked about this is on everybody's top 10 list. Mm-hmm.
It gets a three-disc edition.
Yeah, three-disc edition.
Is it three discs in there?
Three-disc special edition.
Wow. Careful.
The 2003 Outpost Gallifrey poll to mark the series' 40th anniversary, this story was voted best ever.
What?
So not only top 10, top all time best ever.
Did they not remember this story?
Somebody please explain this to me. I really hope we get a lot of feedback next week from people trying to defend it, because maybe... this is one of those things. We talked about this before we watched it, is that as a kid, I remember this one. And I remember being bored out of my mind. That it just... And I don't want to be that... Because I enjoy a slow pot boil as much as the next person. I like stories that kind of take their time to get where they're going, as long as they're doing it well. And there's a lot of this that I think does that. But then you turn around and it's like, but at the end of the day, nothing happened. And the title, we didn't read it, but the title of Chrissy's feedback was Wake Me When Something Blows Up.
Yeah, you that's know? True.
And it feels very much like that.
I just don't understand how this could even outrank Genesis of the Daleks.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk six-part stories that are epic and do have that feeling. You mentioned this after Friday Night Who, that you totally felt justified when we said Genesis of the Daleks was one of those that is up there. And you...
up there.
It is up there. It's just a well-told story. This one is not. Even though it's got bits, it's got moments that are great. I don't know if it doesn't gel or if it just falls apart or what the deal is.
Well, I think that divide between the two storytelling.
Well, and as a kid, whenever this one would get replayed, it would be one of those that I would sit and I would watch. It's like, all right, Doctor Who's on. Oh, it's Talons again. And I would either fall asleep or just give up
Even bother watching. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe it got replayed the most. And so it's just seared in people's memories. Why it's their favorite.
Interestingly enough, there was a complaint filed to TV Ontario following the initial broadcast because of the alleged racism against the Chinese characters that we've got, you know, the major villain basically doing, you know, a Fu Manchu kind of thing, but he's a white actor, you know, doing this. All the rest of the Chinese characters are either coolies or gang members. And so because of this complaint, the Canadian channel TV Ontario did not rerun this episode when they reran the season. Huh. They just skipped over it entirely. Apparently a number of stations across North America chose to not rerun it. But then you have this comment. Russell T. Davies praises the serial, saying, quote, take the Talons of Wen Chiang, for example. Watch episode 1. It's the best dialogue ever written. It's up there with Dennis Potter, by a man called Robert Holmes. And when the history of television drama comes to be written, Robert Holmes won't be remembered at all, because he only wrote genre stuff. That, I reckon, is a real tragedy. Now, obviously, Russell is praising Robert Holmes for his work on it. And as we've said...
The dialogue in this is great.
Episode 1, in particular, is the one that he points to as being great. But what happened to the rest of it? I don't get it.
I
think there's...
RTD fashioned himself after Robert Holmes.
I think there's I think there's a lot of good dialogue, even in
episode one.
And he is pointing to episode 1, but
the dialogue throughout the entire story is great and sharp and witty.
Except for Magnus.
Except for the villain, which you don't want
to say anything.
Well, yeah.
I don't know. I really want somebody to come and defend their version of this as to why this is. And I kept hoping it. I went into it with open eyes, because we kind of dogged on it beforehand, and I knew that this is not one of my favorites. And I thought, but you know what? As a podcaster, as somebody who is really... I know that I've gushed over my favorites before, and I know that I've poo-pooed on the ones that I didn't like. I really want to try and be objective with this stuff, and I really want to try and give this the opportunity to people show me why this one is great. And I still can't do it. I completely agree. Across the board, every critic dynamic that I can apply to it, the story falls down.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't do it.
Well, the pros do not outweigh the cons. That's what it boils down to.
That's really it.
We can sit here and say, yeah, great dialogue, great characters, great moments. But then, overall, there's so many cons that work against it. So
that's our review.
All right, Sean, what do you got coming
up next
week?
Then there was a giant rat.
What do we got coming up next week?
Next week if it arrives from Amazon.com in time. Hopefully you ordered that off the Vortex site.
I did. I figured out how.
Good for you. John Pertwee's back. Friday Woo-hoo! Night Who. We're going to do Ambassadors of Death.
Hey, who turned out the lights?
Just, just released recently in North America. I think it was earlier in October, wasn't it?
Thank you, right.
So we're not too far behind on this one. But because of the length of the episode, it is a 7-parter. And we've kind of decided that 6 is the limit for our attention spans. So,
even though we've done 7s before.
Unless we want a tangent even more about things like light bulbs, we've decided we're going to break it into 2. So we're gonna do parts 1 through 4 this week for Friday Night Who on the 2nd of November. And then we'll finish the story parts 5 through 7 next week on Friday Night Who. Now, because of that, we won't be reviewing an episode next week. You know what we will be reviewing?
What?
Big what? Finish.
Let me guess. Neverland.
You'd be right.
And Zagreus.
And Zagreus.
Well, good. I'm half done with that homework.
I've started on it. Just so
yeah.
Hey.
And of the 5 minutes I've listened to, I'm shaking my head going, I don't know why they didn't like this. This is awesome so far.
Oh, it started out bad. Oh, my gosh. We're going to have such differing views.
Didn't start off
such
bad.
Differing views.
All right. So there's that. And then we'll do Ambassadors of Death on the show the following week, just because since it's a 7-part story, I think there may actually be a lot to talk about.
Which
on
is
one.
Funny because this is one of those ones that a lot of people pan. They've never been big fans of Ambassadors of Death. However, this is Steven Stepanski's, one of his, of Radio Free Skaros. This is one of his favorites.
Really?
So I'm interested because he always praises this one. Every time I hear him on something, when he talks about these, so I'm excited to watch this to
now,
say.
You've never seen Ambassadors, okay,
no,
right?
I've never seen Ambassadors.
And obviously you've
Ambassadors obviously has been one that's never been available. And I have seen bootleg copies of it. I haven't seen it, but I've seen it available in the black and white. And I've always been reluctant ever since I heard they were going to colorize. I was always reluctant to do any of the recons or anything like that on it. So I stayed away from this one.
Well, it's funny. You want to talk about bringing it back around. I happen to be looking for a completely unrelated series of events at old posts on our website. And the delayed message about Ambassadors of Death is one of the first news stories we ran on the website when we got over to the actual .com address.
Oh, wow.
So, they were having trouble colorizing. Color matching was
yeah. This was supposed to have come out last year.
Yeah,
like in early 2011. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited because I've never seen it. So we'll go from one I have seen a lot to one that I've never seen.
Yeah, I've heard mixed reviews on this one. So
and we also have something starting on Wednesday that we're going to start doing.
Oh yeah, let's talk a little bit about that.
Talk about that. Okay,
we have a challenge for our listeners, and we hope that you all get involved with this
and have fun with it.
Yes,
get involved, have fun, and be honest. Okay, here's the deal. Glenn, who's a big Disney freak, is doing this. Why don't you explain it?
Well, it's called Disney Photo Challenge, and it's essentially something that was either put out there by Disney. I'm not sure if it was actually them, or at least a fan has put this together. It looked pretty official, but anyway, what they did is they put together 30 different topics that you were to take a picture of each day for 30 days. And I started this on October 1st. So if you're following me on Facebook or Instagram, which is where this has actually been done. Yeah, or Twitter. You can see some of the things that I've already posted. But it's simply things like, what is your favorite ride at the park? What's your favorite character? Your favorite villain? A setting. Today's theme was a setting that you'd like to live in, or that you'd like to... No, I'm sorry. Today's was favorite travel, real or unreal. So you could have done, you know, the monorail at the parks. Or I did Magic Carpet.
From
Aladdin. So... but that's what I've been embarking on for the last month, and I'm at the end of the stretch of this. But I've been having so much fun with this that I kind of tossed this idea out to Sean and Keith.
Okay, so what we've decided that we're doing is the official Traveling the Vortex Doctor Who Photo Challenge for November. All right? So here are the rules. We will post topics. There are 30 of them, one for each day in November. And you go and you take a picture that fits that topic. Then you post it to Instagram.
Or Twitter or Facebook
or
wherever.
Facebook, but it would probably work
the,
better
the best
Instagram.
Way to do is to start an Instagram account.
If you don't already have one,
if you don't already
have to download an app for that.
Even the Neanderthal is getting an Instagram.
Go to Instagram, start an account, and then when you share it to Facebook and Twitter. I swear to God, that's the easiest way to do it. That's how I've done it.
And that way we can all see each other's photos.
Because now, then I'll follow you on Instagram and we'll be able to see everybody's stuff.
Here's the catch to this. For example, topic number one, we're going to throw you an easy bone for the first day. November 1st, favorite doctor. So you would take a picture of your favorite doctor. Now, don't just go to the internet and find that.
You can if you'd like.
Well.
However.
But you should take a picture of it.
We want you to be as creative as you can, yes.
And now, I mean, you can take a picture of
the picture. Yes, absolutely.
That's fine. That's totally acceptable. But don't just find a production still photo.
We don't want a screen cap is what we want.
Yeah, and screen cap it and then send that in as your picture. Because that's cheating.
If that's the simple way to do it, or if that's the way you want to do it, that is your choice. However, our challenge to you is to be creative, to take pictures of pictures, or take pictures of things that represent each of these topics for each day.
Like, favorite doctor could be on a t-shirt, an action figure, or even a minifig.
A DVD cover, or in a book.
Yes.
Anything. Anything you can come up with.
Live at a convention.
Live at a convention would be a great one. Action figure, you said that, but like the little, what are the Lego?
The minifig?
What are the Lego guys? Minifigs. What are
they called?
Minifigs. Okay, yeah, the minifig. Take a picture of the minifig. Anything that conveys the message of that particular day's challenge. That's what we're looking for. And as Sean kind of pointed out, we're starting on November 1st because there are 30 days in November. So let's start November 1st. That'll be the first one that you'll do. Now, this is up to you. This is completely your challenge. We're not going to push anybody on this. But you have to remember to try to do it each day because each day is a different thing. And the entire list will be up there so that you can start thinking about what you want for the month, which is fair. So if you see something on there, you might already be percolating later in the month. But the first one, like he said, we're making easy, which is favorite doctor, simply enough, because I think most people already have an answer to that in their head.
Now, do you have, with the Disney one, do they give you the topics in advance, or do you not find out until that?
I had all 30 in advance.
You know all 30
I think that's the most fair way to do it. Yeah.
Now, is it, you could take all 30 of your pictures at once, but then post them once a day?
Absolutely. There's no rhyme or reason to how it does. The rules are simple. It's one a day for so many days.
Okay.
That's really what it is. And we're starting on the 1st, and we expect, you know, if you're going to do this, your day one needs to be day one. Day two needs to be November 2nd.
Okay.
Now, here's the other thing that I think we'll excuse. There's, you know, life gets in the way. If you can't take your photo for that day, take two the next day and catch up. That's perfectly acceptable. Myself, the part of the challenge is to do one a day no matter what I have on my schedule. So for the Disney one, there'll be some times where I'll do it at 7 a.m. in the morning because I've got a full day. There were some days that I did it at 11:59 at night because I was almost out of town. Yeah, or almost out of time. So, that's my personal goal, was always to do one a day for certain. However, if you miss a couple of days, you miss, you know, 27, and you've got to do 27, 28 on the same day. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. So,
all right.
I hope everybody gets involved with this because this will be a lot of fun.
I think it'll be a lot of fun. And, you know, like, because we need an excuse to socialize. Well, it'll give us a chance to.
Here's the other funny thing is I'm just finishing up my Disney photo challenge, and now I'm stepping right into another one. The month I'm going to have one day break because the Disney photo challenge had 30, and there are 31 days in October. And I actually, you could start that one anytime, but I started on the 1st, so I remember each day which was which is why we're suggesting that we start this on November 1st because it's easy to remember that day one was November 1st. If it's November 2nd, you know it's day two. So. But I'm just going to be coming off
this. Because that's about the mental capacity of where we're at.
I'm going to be coming off this 30-day challenge. I'm going to have one day where I get no photo, which is the 31st. And then I'm going to start over again on the
1st. And, of course, the 31st is Halloween, so you'll be taking tons of photos.
Absolutely. And that was my other thing. I thought, I've been trying to avoid taking in any other Instagram, because I love Instagram. I think Instagram is fun. It's a blast. And I love to post in things on there. However, I've been reserving Instagram to one picture a day while I do these photo challenges. And I kept thinking, well, when this is done, it'll free me up and I can just kind of take random whenever I want. No.
Nope.
Because I'll set my own standards again. I'll set my own standards again and go, okay, one a day again for a while. So, anyway, I really hope everybody gets themselves involved in this because it'll be a lot of fun. And again, we're not going to hold anybody to any real strict, you know, rules or anything. Just let's make this fun and let's have a lot of fun with it.
All right. So, are you dying to know what your topics are? Should we read them out?
I am. I'm dying to know, Sean.
Yes. All right, here please. We go.
What are they?
In no particular order. No, I lied because they're in specific order. They're in a very specific randomized order for the month of November.
We spent 30 minutes trying to randomize this list did. For you.
We spent a long time trying to randomize.
I hope you appreciate how random this list is. Number one, favorite doctor.
Okay. All right, we might have planted that one. That might have been our choice for the number one day. Yeah.
Number two, actor you want to be the next doctor.
Can I take Matt Smith as a picture?
It's all up to your interpretation, Keith.
Can I take Paul McGann?
We're not judging anybody on these.
Number three, least favorite doctor.
Really? Those all randomized together that way?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Number four, favorite doctor accessory. And by that we mean the scarf, the bow tie, the fez.
You read into it what you
however,
want.
However, I suppose.
If you interpret
the accessory
in a way
could be the Sonic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Could or be the Sonic.
Could be celery.
However you interpret it.
Favorite celebrity guest star. Favorite Sonic. Favorite adversary. Old adversary you want revived for the new series that has not been done yet.
So, you can't do Macra. You can't do Master. You can't do... There are some limitations.
Cybermen.
Daleks.
Silurians.
Silurians.
And I'm going to go ahead and go out there on
Sontarans.
Record now.
Autons.
I'm going to go ahead and go out there on record now that for all of these people that want to nitpick about, well, the Cybermen we've seen in the new series haven't really been the classic Cybermen, so they have... No, we're saying right now you can't do Cybermen. Find somebody else. where was I? Best TARDIS. Not to be confused with the next one, best console room. Favorite monster.
Those two ended up together.
They did.
I approve.
I'll be done.
Favorite monster. Worst monster. Favorite master. And by that, of course, we mean, you know, just like the doctors had various
actor who
which
plays
actor
the master. Because we have... Can I take a picture of Stephen Moffat? He's my master
he's
now.
My master. I just wanted to make sure that we didn't get pictures of people wearing leather with ball gags and whips and chains.
Well, he is
this
my, favorite,
is my
master.
Favorite master. Now, bonus points if you find a picture of John Sim in leather and whips and chains. A master as a master.
All right. Keep going.
Everyday object that reminds you of who.
That's my favorite.
That, I think
good
it's going to be a
Keith.
Fun one on that.
Thank
good
you.
Job, Keith. Favorite place to watch Doctor Who. Favorite episode new series. Favorite episode classic
Wait,
series.
Those ended up together too?
They did.
Awesome.
Wow.
This is the ultimate list.
It's the ultimate randomized list.
I don't know that this was the ultimate randomized list.
I pushed randomize yeah. until I got a list that I liked.
This is how it's destined to be, Glenn.
First Who product owned. Now that one for some of us could be a little bit of a, wow, I got to go back and think on that.
Well, to be fair, that's... First,
not for you, because you bought your first thing, what, last year?
First product owned that you still own.
Your, right, but I mean...
Your bank that you lost...
Well, no, I never got it.
Oh, okay.
That was but, the one that got away, was I want the okay. bank, I never got the bank. Mm-hmm. So that's what that one is. Which, that would have been a good category, too. Collectible you finally acquired, or, you know, I don't know how you do that.
That's why it's not on the list.
Because some of us wouldn't have it.
But some of us are going to have to legitimately go back and go, did I get that one in 72 or 73?
I know exactly what I had first.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, good for you.
Some, it might be a DVD. That is a product.
It is. Well, like I said, you got yours last year, so I figure you have an easy time.
What else is on the list?
I know exactly what mine is.
What else is on the Sean?
What else is on the Sean?
List, Sean.
The master.
I've had too much podcast juice.
Favorite who?
Can't speak now.
Arts and crafts.
Oh, blame it on that.
Everybody get that? Favorite who arts and crafts. So something that
which is your homemade
a homemade
who item.
Who item. Or your just a favorite.
Or a homemade who item that you've seen somewhere. It doesn't have to be yours.
No, it doesn't have to be something you made.
I mean, if it was something I made. You thought, hey, I'd love to have.
Best season. Best Christmas special. Guilty pleasure story.
Open to interpretation.
Favorite Who shirt?
Doesn't have to be one you own.
Favorite collectible?
Doesn't have to be one you own.
Favorite Big Finish audio?
Doesn't have to be one you own.
Now, again, obviously we're asking you to take a picture of an audio story. Because we're a podcast. We're all about the visual images here. But, you know, go find the cover art or, you know.
It's cover art for all of them.
Interpret that cover. You know, or set a scene.
Absolutely.
Use your action figures and create. This is the scene from that. And we go, oh, yeah, that was cool. You know, something like that.
Absolutely.
Favorite?
Again, creativity.
Creativity is key.
Encouraged here.
Favorite novel. Favorite companion. Actor you want to be the next companion.
Wow.
That's a good one. Who came up with that? That's awesome.
I was just wowing about the the two next to each other in random order.
Oh.
Least favorite companion.
I don't think they're really randomized. He's making it sound
it's
like
it's very
it.
Randomized. Least favorite companion. And then, to round out, November 30th, favorite Doctor Who podcast other than Traveling the Vortex. Because obviously, if you're taking part in our photo challenge, you must like us a little bit. We're your favorite. That's a given. But who else do you listen to and put together something for them? So I think this is a lot of fun. I hope it'll be a lot of fun and not a homework assignment.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we'll get the list posted online, and then you'll be able to take it off.
And you'll be able to look online each time. It'll be there. So go there. Reference it. Have fun with it, please. We hope that you guys all include yourselves in this and set up Instagram accounts. If you're not set up on an Instagram account, or if you are, send us a note what it is so we can favorite you and follow you. And then also, if you're not going to do this on Instagram, that's fine. Do it on Twitter, do it on Facebook, whatever avenue you want to go. Let us know, though, where you're posting those because we want to take a look at them. Okay?
Yeah, we want to take a look at them. We want to be able to see everybody's work. So. There's that.
All right. Is there anything else, guys, that we need to touch on before we finish up this week?
I think that's it.
All right.
I'm a little concerned about this giant rat that's coming toward me from the living room.
That's just because you haven't cleaned the kitchen, Sean.
Oh, wait. It's not a giant rat. It's a little rat that's filmed to look like it's a giant rat. I'm not concerned anymore.
That's going to do it for this week. Until next week, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Keith.
Cheers.
Good night, everybody.
Be seeing you.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.